Hey everyone, David here. Severance is back. The Lorehounds are partnering with Properly Howard to bring you in-depth weekly coverage of season 2. Join me, John, Anthony, and Steve as we unpack every twist, theory, and revelation. We've created a dedicated feed just for our Severance coverage. Simply search for Severance Lorehounds in your podcast app, or find the direct link in our link tree. Our weekly episodes dig deep into the show's mysteries, themes, and bigger questions about identity and consciousness that make Severance so compelling. Season Pass and regular community subscribers get ad-free access to our weekly episodes, plus exclusive content like our Supply Closet bonus series, featuring fascinating conversations with experts like the team from Nevermind the Music. We've explored the neuroscience of memory and personality, decoded the hidden meanings in the show's musical themes, and there's much more to come. You'll also get Steve and Anthony's complete season 1 rewatch series. We believe in total transparency with our listeners. And unlike mammalians nurturable, we're happy to share all of our secrets. Find the link for the Severance feed in the show notes below, or search Severance Lorehounds wherever you get your podcasts. Come theorize with us about what's really happening at Lumen.
And remember, the episode you think you're about to hear is merely a reflection of the episode that thinks it's about to be heard.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger. For thousands of appetizing ingredients that inspire countless mouthwatering meals. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week, and up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with points. So you can get big flavors and big savings. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Hello and welcome back to the Radioactive Ramblings podcast, a podcast where three buddies get together and ramble on about our favorite shows, movies, and always struggle to stay on topic. I'm one of your hosts, Aaron.
I'm another host, Chase.
And I'm the last host, Richard.
And before we get into the topic of today's episode, I just wanted to share a little bit of info about our new Patreon. We're going to be releasing early and ad-free content to all of our Patreon subscribers, including our biggest benefit so far, which is you getting these fantastic Studio Ghibli movie reviews an entire month early. So at the time that you're going to be listening to this review, shortly after Princess Mononoke is going to be out on the Patreon, but if you are not a Patreon subscriber, you'll have to wait until the end of January to get that. So it's just a little bit early if you don't feel like waiting. It's still going to be monthly. You're not going to miss a month, nothing like that. Just a little thank you to the people who make this podcast possible. So you can go and check it out. We have a few different tiers, and all of them, including our cheapest, is going to have that.
All right, let's get into the topic of today's episode, being the Studio Ghibli film Spirited Away.
Richard, if people want to get a hold of us, what's the best way that they can do that?
Oh, you know this is where I shine. We got a slew of different ways that you can get in contact with us. First of which is always going to be our email, which is radioactive@thelorehounds.com. We do have a channel set up for Radioactive Ramblings in the Lorehounds Discord server. You can send us a message, chat about the show, tell us we suck. Don't do that. Pretty please don't do that. we also have the contact form, or you can leave us a voicemail at thelorehounds.com. And we do have a Blue Sky account, which is Radioactive141. We post on it sometimes. We got to remember to do that more, but we're working on it, I promise.
Yeah, we've been trying to interact with the community a little bit with the whole Lorehounds network, and whenever we remember that our blue sky exists, we've been more active on there than we ever were on Twitter. So,
yeah, I can't imagine why. It's almost like Twitter is an Twitter's a place.
Yeah, it's almost like there's some pretty awful, terrible opinions going around on Twitter.
It's like the seventh ring of hell.
I honestly really think it might be the tenth circle. Like, you know, there's the nine circles in Dante's Inferno. There's a special one. It's called Twitter. That's it.
Well, now it's called X. So
joke and make it worse.
Well, it's called X because X is the Roman numeral for 10, bro. It makes sense.
I wasn't even thinking of that.
Yeah, idiot.
Yeah, why don't you X out your audio for the rest of the podcast, buddy?
Oh, yeah. All right. Before we started recording, we did discuss an exclusive Patreon benefit, which is just me cutting all of Richard's audio out.
Yeah, that's crazy. I think we should cut all of your audio out, actually, buddy.
I think we should take a vote on it, guys. Let us know in the Discord.
I'll put a poll up on Blue Sky.
Oh, right.
Which one of us gets kicked off?
Yeah.
Except its only option is Richard.
Wow. Radioactive Richard. Richard. Just all of his different usernames.
Yeah, what else? Are you going to put Skeleton Boss Man on there from the old days?
I absolutely will. And now the whole internet knows that.
Oh, I know.
That used to be your
username. Hey. You know, I've changed. I have a better one now.
Yeah, the whole internet.
All
is listening right now.
Nah, Skeleton Boss Man was a terrible name, but I did, in my defense, I made it when I was like six. So
that's kind of fire, though.
Yeah, I know, right?
This is going to be a full review with spoilers. So if you, for some reason, are listening in and you haven't seen it and care about spoilers, this is the time when you would check out and just come back, because this movie came out in what, the 90s?
I think it was 2001.
So it's been a while. If you still haven't gotten around to it like I hadn't 2 weeks ago, come back to us and we'll still be here. But without further ado, Chihiro, a 10-year-old girl, while moving to a new neighborhood, stumbles upon a mysterious tunnel that leads her into a magical world ruled by gods, witches, and spirits. As Chihiro ventures deeper, she discovers that this is no ordinary place, but a spirit bathhouse where supernatural beings come to rejuvenate. Her awe turns into shock when she finds out that her parents have been transformed into pigs after eating food belonging to the spirit world. Stranded in this mystical realm, Chihiro must muster the courage to work within the bathhouse to free herself and her parents. Under the employment of Yubaba, the formidable witch who runs the bathhouse, Chihiro has her name changed to Sen after having her own name stolen by Yubaba. Throughout the whole ordeal, she meets a host of characters, including Haku, a mysterious boy with a connection to her past, and other spirits who guide and challenge her. As Sen, Chihiro embarks on a series of adventurous tasks, facing both perilous and poignant moments that help her grow beyond her fears. Her journey is filled with challenges that teach her values of perseverance, bravery, and selflessness. In a climactic encounter, Chihiro must pass a test to prove her resolve and recall her identity, which is the key to breaking the spell on her parents and escaping the spirit world. Through her adventures, Chihiro transforms from a sullen, scared child into a confident and courageous young hero, ready to face her rekindled life in the human world. Chase, thank you for writing all of that and for our little reminder here. And without further ado, should we get into the characters, or do we want to give like a brief first impressions of this movie, like what we generally thought about it?
Yeah, we could go into some thoughts. We're not tied down to the order of the
outline,
the notes. Yeah.
Yeah.
We aren't ruled by invisible lines here.
Right.
I'm glad that cracked you up.
I always crack myself up. As I always say, every joke that I make is for my own entertainment and if anyone else is entertained.
Okay, you can't steal that from me, you piece of shit. You can't steal that from me. That's my thing, asshole.
It seems like he just did, though. So,
Richard, why don't you start us off?
So I think you and I agree in this is my favorite Studio Ghibli movie. It was Howl's Moving Castle, but after rewatching this one again, I can firmly say This is my favorite. I like the story. I think it's presented not better. You know, it's all presented amazingly in all of these movies, but I do think I get it better in this one. I don't know how to explain it. It clicks easier for me.
Yeah, that's kind of how I felt about it too. There's something, and I get into this a little bit later, but there's something about this movie that just feels so magical and captivating.
I mean, Aaron, you could just do your how we felt portion right now. And we could just ramble a bit more later.
I don't want to get into all of it now, just because I want to save a little bit of it for later. But that's pretty much, that's all I really wanted to share for now, is that it felt really magical and captivating. And I don't know, this one just really clicked with me in a way that Howl's Moving Castle, not to say that it didn't click with me. I thought it was a really great movie, but this one just resonated with me a lot more. Chase, what did you think about this movie?
Disclaimer to all that I did write this section after seeing Aaron and Richard's parts, so be warned that if we are sharing an idea, it's most likely inspired by their points. One thing I wanted to say is that it's very clear to me, as someone who's seen the vast majority of Ghibli films multiple times over, why this one is the most popular. I think Boy and the Heron actually outsold this one in the box office, but I'm sure more people have seen this one. I think that this also has to do with the fact that this is one of their movies with a more solid and straightforward narrative structure. Not to say that this movie doesn't suck you in, and that their other movies don't have a true story or an underlying theme or climax or anything like that. That's not true. But unlike the other Ghibli films, it feels more like you're there following Chihiro on a magical journey rather than being a spectator of someone's just magical life where certain exciting things are just coming to pass. It seems that this movie also is a little bit more like Chihiro getting lost in a magical world for a short period of time, where a lot of the other movies exist within the magical world as a whole. And I think that's another thing that we'll bring up again in Boy and the Heron. I most definitely enjoy every watch of this movie, but I still think that Mononoke is my favorite. But back to this film, I would give it a 9.3 out of 10. I think that the characters are fun, that the themes are well done, and the art is superb, but I don't think this film is as moving as some of the other Ghibli works.
That's very fair. I can definitely see why you liked Princess Mononoke better, but we'll talk about that either in a couple of days if you're on the Patreon, or at the end of January, if you're just listening along on the main feed. Should we get into some of the characters? I think that we're starting out with Chihiro, also known throughout a little bit of the movie as Sen, who is a young girl that wanders into the realm of gods and spirits following her parents' transformation into pigs. What did you think about her parents transforming into pigs?
It was a good representation of greed and all that, but it was just it's interesting.
More of gluttony than greed, but keep yapping.
Okay, I would say it's a solid representation of both, so shut up.
Yeah, no, you're right.
Yeah, shut up.
If I saw food that looked that good just sitting there...
Dude, I know.
No, you would not. No, you would not.
What do you mean? What do you mean, no, you wouldn't, Chase?
It looked like a restaurant.
You wouldn't just be like, I'm gonna fucking eat it and pay whenever they get here.
Yeah, I would, dude. Do you see that shit?
I feel like when I watched that movie, I was like, this is unreasonable.
I don't care. I don't care that it seems unreasonable.
No wonder she's like, what the fuck are my parents doing right now?
Nah. Did you see all that shit, though? It looks so good.
I mean, I've seen good food before. Doesn't mean I fucking steal it.
Yeah.
I would have to imagine that there was some kind of charm on the food.
I'm sure there's some kind of, spell in order to reel them in. Because we see, obviously, Yubaba's a greedy, evil witch.
Yeah.
And is the implication that all of those pigs there that are going to be eaten by the spirits, were they all humans at one point?
I think that's the implication, right?
That's how I took it.
Yeah. So that's very interesting. Before we... I'm going to kind of skip around a little bit.
Yeah.
Is Lynn a human or a spirit?
I think she's human, right?
Chase, do you know?
Don't really know. I just interpreted it as spirits can have like a human form in the spirit. I mean, we see Haku looks like a fucking dude for most of the movie.
Well, yeah.
It's entirely possible that she's a human like Chihiro, but I don't know.
I think it would definitely support what Aaron was saying about if all of those pigs are people who eat the food, you know, Lynn could have been in a similar situation, but who knows?
I was looking up the character of Lynn a little bit because that was a big question I had. And apparently in the art book for Spirited Away, Lynn was supposed to be a white fox spirit, but they kind of went a different direction with her in the movie.
Mm.
So I thought that that was kind of interesting, and it makes me think, you know, I don't know whether the movie changed her into a human or if she's just taking on that form. But a few of her lines of dialogue, like she says, oh, I'm going to smell like human. Human or something like that, points to her being a spirit. Maybe they just wanted us to sympathize with her a little bit more, or buy into her relationship with Chihiro a little bit more.
Right.
I always just assumed Chihiro is like the only actual human there.
Yeah. I thought that Haku was for the first half of the movie. I thought that he was just a human as well. Obviously, that turned out to be different, and I have some information about his character as well later on. Richard, do you want to take us into Haku with your thoughts about him?
Yeah, first off, I just thought he was a cool dude. But he was a spirit that for most of the movie takes the form of a young boy. And then he just turns into a dragon. And his dragon design it's really pretty. Like, I think it's a beautiful design. I just really liked his design and I liked his character. You know, I like that he helped Chihiro out throughout the movie.
You have a haircut that's almost exactly like his.
So I actually don't have...
You're like the same height as him, too.
I'm 6 foot, so
I wrote in my notes before we learned Haku's name, I put him down as fuck ass bob boy.
Is crazy.
He has a bob.
He does have a fuck ass bob. Like, I fully agree with this statement. I just it's insane.
I feel like he's slaying a little bit,
maybe just a little bit with with that haircut. I mean, imagine you're a spirit, right? And you can take pretty much any form that you want. You choose that form, and that says a lot about you.
I don't know if he can take any form.
I would just stay in the dragon form, though.
That might just be his human form.
He had to have had some agency in choosing his human form.
Maybe?
I feel like he did, and that's the one that he chose for himself. Haku, I felt, was a character that I didn't necessarily feel as big of a connection to as I did with some of the other characters in this story. He kind of felt like he was off on the sidelines for a lot of it, and when he was involved, he was kind of just a story element to give Chihiro exposition up until the very end, which I liked the way his character ended up.
It did feel like he was doing a lot to do a little. Every time he was on the screen, especially in his dragon form, it felt like he was doing too much. Like,
and accomplishing nothing, yeah. I'm with you.
Yeah, exactly.
I also was curious as to how he became Yubaba's apprentice and what that relationship really meant. It didn't seem like they had a master-apprentice relationship. It just kind of felt like he was another person working in the bathhouse.
I thought he, like, signed himself over so that he could use magic or something.
Makes even less sense to me when you realize that he is himself a spirit. It's kind of like, why would he need to...
We see other spirits, even though they're magical, they don't have magical powers.
Right.
Yeah, that's true.
Just because bro's a dragon doesn't mean he can breathe fire.
It's true.
Oh my god, put that in your fucking quotes of the year.
I will. Yeah, I'll put that in. He also got messed up by some paper birds, so we can't really put his power level too high.
But they're Yubaba paper birds.
Oh, right. So how high does that scale? Can he beat Goku?
Okay. Okay.
Who wins in a fight? Haku or Alucard?
Alucard slams.
Yeah, absolutely clears him. Did you finish it today or you still got...
No, I finished episode 6 of the last season.
We're covering Nocturne, right?
We will be.
I want to. I haven't gotten around to Nocturne yet, but I'm done with the original series.
I still got to finish Nocturne, but if we do, are we doing a recap of season 1 or nah?
Yeah, we should do a recap. We could do like episode. It's only like four episodes or something short, right? Or eight.
Nocturne season 1 was like 8 or 10.
Okay.
It was only after the first couple seasons of the original show that they like lengthened it.
With a show like Castlevania, you can just do a one podcast per season type of thing. It doesn't make too much sense to...
Yeah.
I don't know, though. You've seen Nocturne, though, right, Chase?
Yeah, loved it.
If it was 10, 12 episodes, maybe we could split it in half. But yeah, I feel like it's not enough.
I don't think it's enough content.
Yeah, just like one longer episode instead of...
I mean, we could do two maybe per season. I don't know, but
we'll figure it out.
We'll get there when we get there.
Yeah, for sure.
Let's talk a little bit about Yubaba, the evil witch who likes to steal people's names, is greedy, and is the owner of the bathhouse. Crazy that she punishes humans for being gluttonous and greedy, and she's the greediest one of them all.
Yeah, she really is. I thought her design was cool, though.
Yeah, I thought that her design and, of course, Zeniba was really cool. Chase, you had some stuff to say about their design, right?
I mean, they just kind of look like Richard, TBH.
Yeah, no, I get it. It's like, what I see when uncanny. I look in a mirror.
If you guys ever see someone that looks uncannily like Yubaba, sounds like Yubaba, smells like an evil witch, you probably have seen Richard in real life.
This is crazy. I was told to, because one of my buddies, or a few of my buddies from work, listened to the podcast here and there, and they told me to stop the Chase slander. I am not stopping the Chase slander. I'm ramping it up after that one. Fuck you.
We're just speaking facts, and speaking you just slander.
I don't slander anyone, all right? Everything I say about everyone is true all the time.
Her relationship with the baby, her supposed son. That was so unsettling.
Bo,
is that his name, Bo?
Yeah, I don't... I got him in like the others tab because I didn't really.
Yeah, like he's not worth having as a description.
Yeah, like,
but
like
he's there.
Big baby. That's it.
I absolutely loved when he gets turned into the little gerbil, and Chihiro is like, "Oh, doesn't he look familiar to you?" And she's like, "Don't be stupid. That thing doesn't look familiar."
Yeah. Perfect design for a witch, honestly. Like, the fit was hard.
Yeah, Studio Ghibli really does a good job with the witches. I think of the Witch of the Waste in Howl's Moving Castle, and Yubaba and Zeniba in this, and they just do a good job of making these repulsive-looking, like, stereotypical witches, which I think is very funny and kind of, you know, it's a trope that I enjoy in media, the like gross Wicked Witch of the West type character.
Yeah.
I also like when we get more nuance to the whole aspect of witchcraft in shows, but for this kind of movie, I like the stereotypical mythological witch.
Yeah.
Let's move on to my personal favorite character, No Face, also known as How do you say that?
Kaonashi.
Yeah, I wanted to figure out what the mask was, and that was another name that popped up for him. I'm assuming that's just the Japanese name.
Kao means face. I don't know what nashi means.
I'm going to look this up while you guys talk. I'll get an answer.
He's this spirit that is seemingly evil during some of his time in the bathhouse. Wears a translucent robe and a white no mask, which is used to symbolize mystery or an unsettling nature in plays. My first thought when I saw No Face was that the design reminded me a little bit of Ko, the face stealer from Avatar: The Last Airbender.
Yeah.
He does have that, like, unsettling nature.
So, Kaonashi translates to, obviously, like Chase said, Kao means face.
Is it face of death or something?
Nashi like means there isn't. So, it literally is just no face.
Oh, okay. That makes sense.
She sometimes means death or, like, to disappear.
Yeah.
So, that kind of makes some sense.
Yeah. I always find the translations really interesting. I have a little thing later on about Haku's name in Japanese, and
sure
there's some cool connections there. But yeah, we already talked about Lin, so does anyone else have something to say about our buddy No Face here?
I like the mask. I mean
he's got motion twin.
Yeah, he was without a doubt my favorite.
No Riz, but all motion.
Okay.
I love that he's just this goofy little guy who's trying to help Chihiro throughout the movie, and she keeps being so mean to him up until the end.
And then he crashes out big time. Unironically, probably the only representation of Hidalic Bob Crash Out Bands we've seen
up.
In any media we've covered on the platform.
Up.
I think it was justified. He just kept trying to be helpful and nice.
It was a reasonable crash out.
Zeniba. What did y'all think about her? I don't really have a whole lot of...
When you first meet this character and, like, you're introduced to them, I remember upon my first watch, I was like, what the heck is going on? Literally was like, huh? Genuine mouth agape, huh? What is going on? Who is this? Because there's zero... I mentioned this, I think, was it earlier in the recording or maybe it was before we recorded?
I think so.
But there's literally zero mention, zero hint at this character, at least that I noticed, until you meet her and you're like, who is this?
Yeah, and then they're just like, oh, Zeniba, it's Yubaba's evil twin sister.
And I'm like, what? In my head, I was like, this has to be some trickster magician, like, taking the form of Yubaba, right? That's what my theory was on the first watch. And then, actually, she's just her sister. I was like, huh? What?
Yeah, I was a little confused.
They're twins, and I think they wear almost the exact same outfit, right?
Not almost the exact.
It's the exact same drip.
It is the exact. Oh, okay.
They are one and the same.
Right, like two sides of the same coin type shit.
Yeah.
Kamaji creeped me out a little bit when he went into his, like, spider mode and was skittering across the floor a little bit.
That was my favorite character in the movie.
I thought the design was cool. Like, I don't like spiders, but I thought the design was really cool.
His little coal sprites that he has remind me a lot of the little coal creatures that you can find in the mines in Stardew Valley. I think Stardew Valley took some inspiration from...
Oh, they definitely did. They definitely did.
That was my first thought when I saw those. I was like, oh my god, Stardew Valley. And then I was pointing at my screen, so...
Sitting there pointing at the screen.
Yeah, sitting there alone, talking to my dog.
Look at that!
Yeah, Galleon definitely thinks you're just tweaking.
Galleon is a human in a dog suit, so...
He's a good dog. He's a good
Every
boy.
Every time you send a flick of that guy, it genuinely looks like a human without skin lives inside of your dog.
That's so crazy.
I feel like all golden doodles have those really human eyes that make them look like that.
It perturbs me, I'm not going to lie.
It's a hallmark of their breed, but he's so soft. He's a good dog. We'll have to post up some dog pictures in the Discord.
Yeah.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger. For thousands of appetizing ingredients that inspire countless mouthwatering meals. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices. Plus, extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week and up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with points. So you can get big flavors and big savings. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Chase, you want to start us off with your interesting moments? You already started us off with a little bit about Yubaba's twin, but you want to get us into your second one too?
Yeah, her and her twin in them, I guess. My next interesting moment is Chihiro knowing Haku's name because of when she was younger, when she fell in the river that he's the spirit of and knew the name of the river, and that's how she knew his name. I thought that was very interesting, a nice little bow tie for their relationship.
Yeah.
And the river was called Kohaku.
Yeah.
Let me get into my first point here, which I thought that when No Face was flooding the bathhouse with his, quote, gold nuggets, it was so hilarious. When all the workers are just begging for money and then he ends up eating some of them, it had me rolling. It truly was one of my favorite moments in the movie. And when he's going through handing out all the gold nuggets, you guys, are either of you familiar with when Mansa Musa was on his pilgrimage?
He was like the richest person to ever exist.
I knew he was the richest person to ever exist, but I did not know about this part.
I didn't know he crashed the Egyptian economy, like you wrote in the notes.
Yeah. So basically what happened was when he was on the Hajj to Mecca, he was going through Egypt and he brought so much gold to Egypt with him that it completely crashed the price of gold for almost 12 years in Egypt.
Holy shit. I didn't know that part. I just knew he had such an absurd amount of gold that even in today's economy, he'd still be the richest person alive.
Yeah, I think I'm not sure if this is actually true or one of those kind of historical myths, but I'm pretty sure that he was quite literally throwing gold nuggets and dust into the streets for people to catch. Like, it was a crazy
event. If I was balling out of control, I would be too.
Right.
Balling out of control.
You like that?
I like that one.
I mean, I feel like that's the perfect way to describe Bro's motion.
Yeah, so it reminded me a lot of that when I was watching it, except it turned out that No Face's Gold was just completely fake in the end. But I really liked that moment. The whole No Face being a menace in the bathhouse was too funny. When he's stealing all of the little tablets, what do they call them? The bathhouse tokens.
Oh my god, the tokens. Yeah, the ones
that they use for like the different kinds of water.
Yeah, the tokens. When he stole all of them and just gave a big bucket of them to Chihiro.
Yeah.
Just constantly causing chaos. It was great. But the other moment I took note of was Chihiro's interview with Yubaba. If I had an interviewer be that aggressive, I would definitely just fold under the pressure and run out of the room. I don't know that I could handle that. And it was also one of our first introductions in the story to the theme of how much power a name holds in this world, in the spirit world, and just in the world of the movie, and gave us a little bit of insight of what it means to take away that name from someone. And we see that later on with Haku. Just in general, it's a pretty major part of the film. So I thought that was a good way to introduce us to that idea.
I mean, I think it also ties into Japanese culture a little bit too, where like names are a lot more important and hold a lot more value there. In Japan, if you're not like very close friends with someone, you call them by their last name. Yeah. In order to call someone by their first name, you have to be like best buddies or like a romantically involved with someone.
It's very interesting. I didn't know that.
Yeah.
Richard, what were your interesting moments for this movie?
I like the design, but I don't like the design of Kamaji. I loved the whole furnace room. Obviously it was really cool. The little coal guys, I know we were talking about them earlier. They were just so silly and like kind of cutesy, you know? I would pet one. Kamaji was a pretty fun character too, even though I do not like spiders. But he was cool, and he helped get Chihiro in the door a bit more with Lin, and yeah.
Before you get into your next one, and while we're talking about the furnace room, the other thing that those little coal sprites made me think of, this is really out of left field, but when I was a kid and I would play Club Penguin, I had a black Puffle, and it reminded me a lot of that, too.
Holy fuck. Oh my god, I could not tell where you were going with that.
Not even completely out of left field for me, I feel like, because I yap about this stuff a lot. In the Stormlight Archive, there are these little things.
Holy shit! Shut up!
No, there are these little things that are like the spirit of everything, and I don't know, it reminds me of Spren, dude. They're just silly little guys.
What was your second point?
My second point, I don't know, I thought it was interesting, like Chihiro's parents getting turned into pigs, the whole representation of greed and gluttony there, and also the whole part where she needs to save them and remember which ones they are, definitely added some more stakes to the adventure. It made it feel like there was a bit more going on.
Yeah, I would agree with that. I think that saving her parents, even though it was kind of her driving motivation throughout the story, it felt secondary to everything that was going on inside the bathhouse. Mm-hmm. So I really liked that they kind of put that plot to the wayside, and it was her ultimate goal, but she had to solve a lot of other things before she could get to that. How much time do you think that she spent in the bathhouse?
Like real world time?
Yeah, because I took that to be maybe a week at most.
Yeah.
That's what I was going to say, like a week, maybe like a day or two longer.
Yeah.
Yeah. Somewhere in that range.
Just because when they come out, their car is covered in a little bit of debris, so it's clearly been a little bit of time, but it doesn't take long for some branches to fall, so.
Yeah.
Yeah. Any other interesting moments or character thoughts before we move on to our art?
No, I don't think we have anything.
Richard, you ended us with our interesting moments, so why don't you just take us right into what you thought about the art with this one?
You know, one thing, I've said it before in this episode a few times already, I'm going to say it again. Yubaba's look
was unique, really leaned into that whole evil witch trope. I mean, I feel like there's not too much more to say about that. Kind of kicking the dead horse at this point. Yeah, yeah. Yubaba's look was fresh. All right.
Yeah.
And the frog spirits that were in the bathhouse. I really liked those. They were silly looking.
Well, Yubaba was really unique, except for the fact that there were two of her.
Okay, you know what I mean,
exactly
though.
Like you.
No, you know what I. You know what I mean, though. Like, maybe you don't.
No, I we're just messing with you.
No, we agree.
Yeah, yeah. All right, fuck you guys. Also, again, we said it earlier, but the food, dude. I would have eaten that shit so much. I would be a pig right now.
You guys are unreal. I feel like that was like genuinely the most outlandish part of the movie was like just like two grown adults being like, we're just gonna eat it anyways and hopefully someone turns up then we can pay them later. Like,
that food looked good.
I mean, yeah, you're not wrong.
Yeah, like I would be a pig.
I think there's a Binging with Babish episode where one of the people he works with makes the Spirited Away spread.
Mm. Yeah, I know that he made the Howl's Moving Castle breakfast as well.
Ooh, that's fire.
So, yeah, shout out, I guess. Not yeah. that he needs it.
Yeah, can Binging with Babish like shout us out? What the fuck?
Yeah, have him on the next episode. Yeah, so Richard, did you have any other thoughts on the artwork before we move on?
No, that was really it. As per usual, the
animation style was really pretty and, you know, it was fluid. But I feel like that's just the standard for every Ghibli movie.
Chase, do you want to do yours before mine?
You know what? Sure. Sure, I didn't really write much about the art. I feel like this movie has a little less standout art moments compared to the other movies, just because I think even though there's a lot of magic in the movie, it's less flashy. I think the movie as a whole is just standout art-wise. And so the soot spirits, I like them a lot, like little guys running around. And I love the alterations to human designs when they're spirits. Kamiji, of course. I think what you guys were talking about kind of like lends credence to the point I'm about to make. You don't like a spider, but they do it in a way that you like him. And I think it's just because they do such a good job of making the evil, gross-looking guys still have, like, personality and be, like, someone you can empathize with.
Yeah, and even the design on that river spirit that came into the bathhouse as this polluted muck creature. Even the design on that guy was really cool and interesting. There's a lot of messaging in this movie about environmental stuff, which I feel like that's a through line in a lot of Ghibli movies, is the idea of protecting the environment.
Yeah.
Yeah. So the first thing that I have for what I noticed about the art, witches and wizards that can turn into birds or flying creatures, that seems to be kind of a big thing for Miyazaki. Howl's Moving Castle had a lot of that, and Yubaba is able to do it. When I was looking up what the inspiration for this was, apparently I haven't seen Ponyo.
We have to, dude, that one is going to be great. I really like, oh, you want that one next?
I mean, I'd watch it. You've been gassing it up. I think we need to fucking see it soon.
I mean, I kind of want to see what the people in the Discord have to say about what they want next. But
yeah, of course.
But sure. If we don't get any input, I guess we're doing that one next.
Hell yeah.
Yeah. So apparently Fujimoto from Ponyo is also able to do this. And when I was looking into it, it seems like that's a really common theme in Chinese and Vietnamese folklore to have magic users who exhibit bird-like qualities. So I'm always interested to learn more about the mythology and the beliefs of different cultures around the world. And seeing in these movies all of these influences from East Asian culture, I feel like I'm learning a lot about the mythology, East Asian culture. So that's really cool.
I really do want to get more into like some East Asian culture. I've been playing Wukong again, and I love Wukong.
Oh, yeah.
I want to actually read Journey to the West. And I also, there's a lot of cool Japanese mythology. I don't know it as well as I know like Norse and Greek and Roman and more Western shit.
Princess Mononoke was really good for learning a lot about Japanese mythology. that had a lot of Japanese mythology.
Yeah, a lot of East Asian mythology is actually really interesting and cool. I feel like it's a lot less based in war than a lot of other mythologies.
Yeah, it seems to have a lot more to do with the spiritual realm and nature, and those are all themes that I find a lot more interesting than just God of War does this and that.
Yeah, there's a lot of like magical realism.
Yeah, for sure. But earlier in the podcast, I was mentioning that I had some notes about Haku. So his spirit / dragon form I thought was really interesting. Obviously, he's the spirit of the Kohaku River. And in the Japanese version, Haku's name, which I am going to try and get this as right as I can, Nigihayami Kohakunushi, which means God of the Swift Amber River. I thought that was a really cool translation, and I enjoyed learning that when I looked into the Japanese names. I watched the English version of this movie, so I didn't get a lot of the Japanese names, and so I was looking them up and seeing what they kind of meant. It adds a layer of interest to this movie to learn those translations.
Yeah. I also like your next point.
Yeah. My second favorite creature in this movie after No Face had to be the radish spirit in the elevator. I thought the design on him was really funny, which Studio Ghibli always does a great job with the creature design, which is kind of saying something because their design is always on point, and this movie just did it even better than I think the other movies that I've seen so far has done. But yeah, from what I could find, it was inspired by both sumo wrestlers and by the Tamaya Gozen, which are agriculture spirits in Japanese mythology. So sort of that blending of the agriculture spirits and sumo wrestlers, it made for a really interesting look for this guy. And seeing him go up and down the elevator with Chihiro in there, it was just a great little scene that introduced us to some of the more fantastical aspects of the bathhouse. So I appreciated that. Even though it was inspired by those two things, it seems like this is more of a Miyazaki creation than anything. Like, there's no direct reference to any kind of radish spirit in Japanese mythology, but it was just kind of took inspiration from those few things. Chase, do you have anything to add to your how you feel section? I know you kind of went through a lot of that earlier.
I'm gonna let you go, and then I'll collect my thoughts a little bit.
All right. Like I said earlier, this one has been my favorite Ghibli movie. Having seen Howl's Moving Castle, Spirited Away, and most recently Princess Mononoke, which I think that we're planning on recording tomorrow, this one just sits leagues above the other two. That's by no means a diss against Howl and Mononoke, but this just had that childlike wonder and magic that I want out of a movie like this. It was really creative. It was funny. The characters are super endearing, and it has a lot to say about the dangers of pollution, greed, and even some messages about not judging a book by its cover, which I thought of with the river spirit that was covered with muck and debris when he first comes into the bathhouse. And of course, Haku's ridiculous bob made me chuckle every time I saw it. Yep. So I felt a real connection to these characters much more than anything else that I've seen lately, whether it be Ghibli or not, honestly.
I think one of the reasons this movie is you like it a lot more and you feel more connected to the characters is that I think this movie does a better job of focusing in on the actual main character of the movie. Like in Howl's Moving Castle, I think that Sophie's just there and we're with her. This movie, we get to see Chihiro really express herself and grow.
She has a lot more agency within the story than Sophie had in Howl's Moving Castle.
For sure. I think that's, that's a good point.
Oh, I didn't write like a number rating. Let's see. This is going to be controversial. I'm giving it a 10 out of 10. I thought it was a near perfect movie for me.
Fair enough. I'll get into mine once I do my review, but I don't want to cut you off if you got any more to say.
No, I'm all set. Take it away, Richard.
All right. Now that I've rewatched it, this is, I said this earlier, but I'm obviously going to dive a little deeper into it. I think that this is the best Ghibli movie. I fully agree with Aaron on that. My one dig is that I think that Howl's Moving Castle has a better soundtrack. That's my only thing that I
think that it 100% does better than Spirited Away, but they're both, I mean, they're both phenomenal movies. I think I had Howl at like a 9.7. I would put this one at a 9.8 or a 9.9. I prefer the way that everything is portrayed in this. I think that the messages and themes, I said them when I was writing this out that they're more important, but I don't even think that's true. I guess they're just more easily applicable to life today. But it's one of my favorite animated movies of all time, and the fact that it holds up today, 23 years later, with its unique animation style, it's amazing.
It wouldn't be a Radioactive Ramblings podcast if I didn't have a stupid question for both of you. So before we get into our outro and everything, if you were to be one of the spirits in this movie, who would you be?
That's an interesting question.
I mean, honestly, I think I'd want to be one of those little soot guys. They're just so silly.
It kind of makes sense. You're a welder, too. You're working near the furnace.
There actually isn't a furnace at a weld shop, idiot. So,
oh, my God. Close enough, man. You're covered in soot.
I am covered in soot sometimes. It's pretty bad.
I guess I'd want to be one of the spirits that gets to enjoy the bathhouse.
Well, true.
I guess maybe like a... like
the radish guy?
Yeah, I guess the rat. I mean, he looks pretty fucking happy.
Yeah. Aaron, what kind of spirit do you think you'd be?
I'd want to be one of the little chef guys who's making the food, this little spirit world food. That's who I would want to be. Either that, or I would want to be No Face because his reign of terror in the bathhouse looked like he was having a lot of fun.
Yeah, that's just how you are, dude.
Oh, yeah, I cause chaos wherever I go.
Yeah. I've said it before, I'll say it again. You are an agent of chaos.
That's what I aspire to be. I don't know if I get there every day, but we try our best.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, any final thoughts on this movie before we move into our outro today?
This is just my, I mean, I guess I should have said this at the start, but to anyone who has not seen this movie and for whatever reason listened to us yap about this the entire time, go watch the movie. It's phenomenal. If you're a fan of like animated movies and you have not seen Spirited Away or Howl's Moving Castle for that matter, go watch that.
That's kind of what I've been asking myself, was why the fuck haven't I seen these before? Like this.
Yeah.
Or why haven't I seen them in so long? I do think I've seen Howl's Moving Castle a long time ago, and I might have seen Princess Mononoke a really long time ago, but I don't know what I was doing not having seen these.
Now, I want you to take that logic and apply that to stuff like Attack on Titan as well, because Attack on Titan is so... No, it's so good, and he needs to watch it.
I can't watch every show, Richard.
It is really good, but I just feel like we're never going to get him to watch it unless Aaron, like, finally folds.
Yeah.
Maybe. We'll see. I do want to watch it eventually, but I've just been caught up in shows that I'm more interested in, like Castlevania, and I've been watching along with Silo, and just...
Yeah, fair enough.
There's too much going on right now.
When there's less stuff out, you know, during the off season.
Yeah, there's always an excuse for Aaron.
Oh, I know. I mean, yeah. I still haven't watched Game of Thrones, House of the Dragon, Rings of Power.
We should watch Rings of Power tonight.
Maybe. I haven't even finished Bleach still. Yeah.
I don't even know what Bleach is about.
It's about an orange-haired kid.
Yeah, it's about literally the coolest fucking guy ever.
Ichigo is pretty cool, I won't lie.
With that said, Chase, you want to take us into our outro?
Yeah. All right. Everyone, I think that's all we've got for today. Thank you all for joining us, and we hope you tune in again.
Yep. And before we let you guys go, just want to give a quick shout out to all of the other podcasts in the network. First of all, to the ones who make all of this possible, our parent podcast, The Lorehounds. Also in the network are going to be excellent podcasts like Wool Shift Dust, Star Wars Canon Timeline Podcast, Rings and Rituals, Properly Howard Movie Review, Severance Podcast, and the newest affiliate, Nevermind the Music. They've all got awesome things going on. The Lorehounds have just wrapped up their coverage of the HBO Max series, or actually just Max now. They dropped the HBO. The Max series, Dune Prophecy, which there's a lot of mixed feelings on that, but Wool Shift Dust is going strong on Silo, and Star Wars Canon Timeline Podcast will be coming back soon, I believe. Properly Howard Movie Review is going strong on their new season. Severance is coming back this month in January. So actually next month, it's not the new year yet. Happy New Year, everyone. And thank you for tuning in. We're going to see you all next month in Irontown.
Hey everyone, David here. Severance is back. The Lorehounds are partnering with Properly Howard to bring you in-depth weekly coverage of Season 2. Join me, John, Anthony, and Steve as we unpack every twist, theory, and revelation. We've created a dedicated feed just for our Severance coverage. Simply search for Severance Lorehounds in your podcast app, or find the direct link in our link tree. Our weekly episodes dig deep into the show's mysteries, themes, and bigger questions about identity and consciousness that make Severance so compelling. Season Pass and regular community subscribers get ad-free access to our weekly episodes, plus exclusive content like our Supply Closet bonus series, featuring fascinating conversations with experts like the team from Nevermind the Music. We've explored the neuroscience of memory and personality, decoded the hidden meanings in the show's musical themes, and there's much more to come. You'll also get Steve and Anthony's complete Season 1 rewatch series. We believe in total transparency with our listeners. And unlike mammalians nurturable, we're happy to share all of our secrets. Find the link for the Severance feed in the show notes below, or search Severance Lorehounds wherever you get your podcasts. Come theorize with us about what's really happening at Lumen.
And remember, the episode you think you're about to hear is merely a reflection of the episode that thinks it's about to be heard.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger. For thousands of appetizing ingredients that inspire countless mouthwatering meals. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week, and up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with points. So you can get big flavors and big savings. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.